And tonight we're really happy to have a very familiar voice for most everybody out there in the audience on, and that's Kathy Werzer. And Kathy, of course, is the host of Morning Edition on NPR. She's a co-host of Almanac on Twin Cities Public Television. That's the longest running public affairs television show, I think, in the country. She's won multiple Emmys and has a very successful earlier book called Tales of the Road Highway 61. She's just released a new book, We Know How This Ends, which was co-written with Bruce Kramer. Kathy, welcome to the Roadhouse, and welcome back.
Wow, thanks, Buck. It's been a long time, quite a long time between Highway 61 and now this book.
Well, you're on a completely different road on this book. This book is a whole different topic, but a very important topic. And to begin with, I'd just like to say that in 2011, I believe, you were introduced by mutual friends to Bruce Kramer. And I guess we didn't say much about Bruce yet, but he was the dean of the College of Education at St. Thomas College. He was a wonderful musician and a professor of leadership there. He was diagnosed with ALS in 2010. About that time, your father had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Your role as advocate for your father was also very large in your life. You had some personal problems, a decaying marriage. You, of course, with your career, it's a high-profile, demanding pair of jobs. When you were approached with interacting with Bruce on this project, that had to be a hard decision to know that you can find time to do this.
Yeah, well, you're right, Buck. Actually, I wasn't going to do it, frankly, because you're absolutely correct. My life was a bit in a shambles, I suppose, and you can't let on, of course, when you are in the public eye. You have to act like everything is just fine, but it really wasn't at the time, and the idea to talk to Bruce Kramer came first as a radio series, really, a series of conversations for Morning Edition on NPR. And you're right, it came through kind of mutual friends, and I really kind of ignored it at first. I thought, yeah, it's an okay idea, I guess. But where do you go with it, was my first thought, because I figured, well, I knew Bruce was a very eloquent man, a very, very thoughtful person, a very interesting person. But I thought, well, where do you go with it? And, of course, the bottom line is, of course, he was dying of ALS. He was diagnosed in December 6th, 2010, with ALS. And then he and I hooked up in 2011. And I thought, well, how far do you take this? I mean, he's going to die. But knowing full well, too, what was going on in my life, my dad had been diagnosed. You know, he was going to obviously pass away somewhere along the line. I thought, I don't think I can handle another person's pain, really, was what I was really thinking. And, you know, there was a time shortly after Bruce and I started to kind of talk about what would this project sound like for the radio, I was going to say no, and then there was like a cosmic ping. I don't even know how to describe it, just a little, like, you've got mail, kind of a little ding, like, you really should do this. And maybe you are the best person to do something like this, despite everything that's going on in your personal life. Maybe you're supposed to somehow be with Bruce on his journey, and you're supposed to learn something from this along with the listeners. And that's how we started down the road, literally. And, boy, I'm glad I did that. I really am. Because that series of radio conversations, wow, was nothing short of extraordinary. And then the book came out of those conversations and Bruce's blog called The Disease Diary. And I'm glad we all stuck with it together and became good friends.
Yes, it occurred to me as I read the book and I learned more about Bruce, and of course I listened to you and also know you from an earlier interview a little bit, and it seemed to me that this was like, it was a perfect storm. It was a perfect time, perfect person to come into each of your lives mutually. you with the understanding that you were gaining about death through your father's disease, and Bruce being so eloquent, as you said earlier, and so good, thoughtful, as he found his way through his disease, it just seemed like, you know, everything's lined up.
Yeah, we were kind of traveling parallel paths there, and we all of a sudden realized that one day. And Bruce was of many, for many people, a teacher. I mean, he was, if you were to ask him, how do you identify yourself? First and foremost, Bruce Kramer said, I am a teacher, a lifelong teacher, a very good teacher. And he became my teacher too, really, and friend along the way. And he taught me really how to kind of take what you might think is a horrible situation, and there's no question about it. ALS is a horrible disease. So is Alzheimer's. You know, so is cancer. All those diseases are terrible. But he taught me how to take what looks like a series of losses, and indeed they are, kind of reframe them, rework them in a sense, and transcend the losses and grow from them. He was a big proponent, I guess, to say, of growth. That if you're growing in life, you're living. The minute you stop growing, you might as well just pack it up.
Can you talk just a little bit about, and you just used this word a couple of minutes ago, but about how you and Bruce both used the word dis-ease, mm-hmm. not together, but in two separate consonants.
You're right. Dis, kind of a little dis-ease. And gosh, that came out of the very first interview when I was talking to him, and I just figured it was disease diary, as in the physical disease. And he said, no, dis-ease. And it's a concept that he kind of came up with where, and it's true if you think about it, because Buck, all of us have some sort of dis-ease in our life. It could be a physical illness, terminal illness. It could be whatever is the kind of the uncomfortable part of anyone's life. Bruce kind of thought of it as a dis-ease. It could be a mental dis-ease. It could be a bad marriage. It could be a loss of your job. It could be your kids are messed up. I don't care what it is. But we all carry around with us some form, maybe multiple forms, of dis-ease. And we all try to hide from it. We don't want to admit it, of course, and it's tough to deal with. But Bruce used to say, you know what, just accept it. It's part of life, and learn from your dis-ease. And don't let it swallow you up, because that can happen too. You know that, you know. Life can get pretty tough, and sometimes it's easier to either put your head in the ground, in the sand, or run from it. And he would say, nope, you got to kind of look it head on and accept that it is part of life to have dis-ease.
As I read through this book, Bruce goes through a number of things, of course, that happen with ALS, and I think at some point, you know, he discusses it as death by a thousand paper cuts. Mm-hmm. They just keep happening. It starts out fairly relatively slowly, but as the book progresses, these things happen faster and faster, the things that he loses and has to deal with, and each time those major things happen, he thinks his way through it and works it out, gets rid of his anger, finds a way to open up to what he has left. But the speed of ALS kind of defies processing after a while.
Yeah, I have never run into ALS before, Buck. Lou Gehrig's disease, some people call it. But I haven't seen how insidious it is. And there were days where I'd go over to Bruce's house, and we would do maybe a interview for NPR, and then just sit around and chat or something, and had great conversations. And he maybe I remember he had the use of his hands. You know, he would use a keyboard, and then the very next week, you would notice maybe the left hand, the fingers not working. It was just in a week something like that would happen, and he would certainly, as he said, and his wife Ev Emerson would say, almost every day they'd cry, because it's just such a sad situation, but they'd cry and get then move on for that day. And they would mourn the loss, each loss that occurred, and it was just one after the next, you know, one day you're driving, the next day you're not. One day you're using a fork and spoon, the next day you're not. I mean, it was just awful to watch that. So he would mourn these losses, and I'm thinking of an example where I thought, boy, you really are an amazing person, Bruce Kramer. Early on in the disease, he fell several times. Just his legs would just crumple, and he would fall to the ground. And this was a man who was a top-notch athlete. I mean, he was buff. He was a bicyclist. He really was in great physical shape. And his leg would go out from underneath him, and he thought, well, this is crazy. I must have a pinched nerve in my back. No, it was ALS. And he started to fall, and there was a point where he thought, he became afraid of falling. And most of us are, right? Especially some of our older friends. You fall, and that's bad news. So he thought, I'm going to reframe this. I'm going to kind of seize the fear of falling by really falling. And he was, at that point, I believe he was starting to use a wheelchair, and he decided to go skydiving.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. And I remember thinking, I said, what? You're going to do what? He went skydiving, and he said it was like his spirit was set free. And it was like a different way to look at the concept of falling. And then there came a point toward the end of his life where his wheelchair, he had a big power wheelchair, which is like 500 pounds, and it flipped over and darn near killed him, trapped him underneath it. And he said, well, isn't that interesting? You know, he survived, but he said, boy, I had to rethink falling again. And he would take these losses and kind of reframe them, you know, mourn them, and then kind of, I want of a better word, I guess, transcend the loss and really become a better person because of it. I know that sounds odd, but I think I'm safe to say, just watching this man, that's exactly what happened.
It seemed like he became better and better, and it's so hard to do on these very basic things, at accepting his new normal.
Exactly. Well, isn't it hard, though, to think to yourself, you and I are sitting here and we're talking and we're doing pretty well, you know. Part of ALS is also losing your voice. You can lose your voice. Bruce did not. Till the very end, he still had a bit of a voice, but he really had to work on the acceptance part of that. And you know, I don't know if I could accept losing my voice, knowing what I do for a living. It'd be really hard.
Yes.
And it's hard for all of us to accept what life gives us, but that's his point. And it's not a new point necessarily. It's just that he is so eloquent in driving home the point that acceptance really, and where you're at right now, right sitting right here listening to this, is where you should be. In the rearview mirror, no sense in looking back there. It's sometimes too sad, especially knowing how he was with an able body. And if you look too far out in the windshield there in front of you, boy, the future doesn't look really great with ALS or any terminal illness that you have. So you have to sit right there in the moment and learn to accept and to enjoy and to really grow through it.
And that's something that you and Bruce both were so eloquent about bringing out is a lot of the teaching that went on here had to do with living in the moment, which is part of life.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
exactly.
we're talking about death and losses, but when it was all spun out, it was really about life.
Right. I know a colleague asked me, well, why do a book about death? I said, you know, the book's really not about death and dying. It's really about living in spite of a terminal illness, or in spite of whatever your challenge is. It's really learning how to live fully as possible. And Bruce, with ALS, certainly, I mean, it was honestly the most amazing thing to watch this person blossom, even as his body was just decimated by this awful disease. His spirit just blossomed and kept growing till his very last breath. And it was such a wonderful learning experience. I'm very sad he's no longer with us. I really wish you could talk to him, you know, and listeners could hear him. He was just such an extraordinary person. But, you know, right up until the very end, he just kept... I asked him at the very end, did you become the person you were hoping to be? And he said, you know, I think I came darn close.
Yeah, I would
not
agree.
Quite there, but I came close. I believe that. I really do. I think he did.
We're speaking with Kathy Werzer, and Kathy has just released a new book that she co-wrote with Bruce Kramer. It's called We Know How This Ends, Living While Dying. And towards the end of the book, Bruce wrote a sermon called From the Silence. It was a sermon he gave on Palm Sunday.
Yes.
And it was one of the most moving parts in the whole book.
Really? Good. I'm interested in hearing that from you.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to why. Now, I don't want to interview you.
it was so well done. As you know, most people, as you mentioned earlier, I think off-air, that Bruce had a lot of time to think.
He did.
And think through each event because it was so much more important because he knew he had a limited time to be around. He wanted things to be as good as they could be.
Right.
You know? And when he wrote this, you know, the emotion comes out and writing about Christ on Palm Sunday and what he went through and relating it to what so many people go through in real life, I mean, in their lives. And then also to Claire and Matt, who were the people he was talking about and talking to through part of that, was so eloquent and ended up with what was really important was the love that Matt gave to Claire. You know, as Matt was passing, she was concerned with what would be left and what would, you know, what is my life going to be like?
Right, right.
And I thought it just all came out because that's in what Bruce kind of got to was the people you love are what's important.
Right. Matt was a gentleman that Bruce ran into at Mayo in the ALS clinic there at Mayo, and Matt was in his last stages of ALS, and one of the clinicians asked Bruce, could you please talk to Matt and Claire? And that was kind of the basis of the sermon, and it really was. I remember being in Bruce's church when he gave the sermon that Palm Sunday. I was recording it for NPR, and there was not everyone was sobbing because it was so eloquent and so heartfelt. And Claire, as Bruce said to Claire, once Matt passes, he'll still be in your heart. You'll still know he's around.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce was also trying to tell the rest of us, too, that very same thing, that he believes that once we pass, you know, that person, that body is gone, but that spirit, that soul still remains, and it lives within each of our hearts. And it was just a lovely, lovely sermon. He did such a beautiful job. And really, he kept telling all of us, listeners and readers and just friends and family, you know, we live in this culture of immortality, and we always think we're all going to live forever, and that's just so not the case.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we still hold on to that because we really don't want to even think about our passing. But really, and it's in, you know, Buddhism too, once you accept the fact that you're going to die somewhere along the line, then you are free to live. And so Bruce came to terms with his death early on. He kept working at it, though,
mm-hmm.
but he came to terms of it, and then he really was free to live, despite the limitations of the disease on his body. He was able to live just this rich, rich, full life despite the disease.
Yeah, there's some major lessons that all of us can learn from, as you mentioned, great teacher,
mm-hmm.
which was Bruce, and yourself as well, as you were writing about your father and about Bruce both. And as you said, they're on parallel paths, and as we look to the rest of our lives, there's some big lessons that we can use from these less people with a lot less time.
Exactly. And Bruce was actually a real help to me learning how to deal with my dad, because toward the end of my father's illness, he lost the ability to speak. and which frustrated my dad to no end, because my dad was a former teacher too. And I would say to Bruce, boy, my dad, I don't know, was doing X, Y, and Z. And Bruce would say, oh, really? You know, you might want to ask him whether this is happening. And I'd go back up north, because many folks know my mom and dad are in Knife River outside of Two Harbors. And I'd go back up north and I'd say, Dad, my friend Bruce suggests that I ask you this. And my dad could still comprehend. He just couldn't speak. And my dad would shake his head like, yes, yes, someone understands. Because Bruce, and my dad was immobile. Bruce was immobile. You know, so Bruce kind of had a little bit of an idea of what my dad was going through. And Bruce's father, who is still with us, also has Alzheimer's. So Bruce really understood what it's like to have that brain-wasting disease. And Bruce helped me understand what my dad was going through and helped me also be in the moment with my dad. Because, you know, as you know, if you have memory issues, in the moment really is all you have. You know, there's so much confusion around that. You can't remember things, and so you just kind of stay right there. And that really helped my father, and it really helped our relationship between my dad and myself. So Bruce was a great teacher in that respect, too.
I just have time for one more question.
Sure.
For you, and it's something that wasn't in the book, except for the fact that we knew that you were asked to do this, and that was Bruce's eulogy at his funeral, and I know he asked you if you would write it. How was that to do with all you went through with Bruce and the emotional level that this whole experience was? Did it just pour out? Were you able to do that and feel happy with what you...
Oh, that was a nice question, Buck. You know, I had a really hard time with it. It's I eulogized my father, and then when Bruce asked me to eulogize him, it was harder to eulogize Bruce because he was such a he was such a presence in this life. And I thought, how in the world am I going to go ahead and sum up this life? Mm-hmm. How am I going to go ahead and try to sum up what we did together? And that was hard. Plus, we became good friends. So I'm eulogizing my friend, who I miss. And I remember I began the eulogy with a line from the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. And she, in a letter to friends upon her mom's death, said, the absence of that presence is everywhere. And the absence of Bruce in my life and those of his friends and family just left this big hole. So it was really hard to get up there and try to express that, too. But I'd hope he'd be happy with what I did.
I'm sure. I'm positive.
I hope, yeah.
Yes. We've been speaking with Kathy Werzer. Kathy is the host of Morning Edition on NPR. She's also the co-host of Almanac on Twin Cities Public Television. She's just released a book that she co-wrote with Bruce Kramer. It's called We Know How This Ends, and it's, I'm sure, on sale anywhere that you buy books, at your local store or online.
Yes, I believe Drury Lane has it too, I believe.
Perfect.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Kathy, we want to thank you so much for giving us your time. You have such a busy life, and our listeners appreciate it as well.
Well, I appreciate your listeners and what you do too, Buck. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy.